So if it is the law of the land, we have 12 years now that we have never, the Hoopa Valley Tribe in 2017 is the only one that's ever made a water call on it. And for the domestic water supply, for irrigation, estimated irrigation water supply, and if necessary, to augment flows for fish passage. So what does that all mean? Kind of some buzzwords in there, I'm sorry for that, but it means that it has never been exercised. But under this administration, with this regional director, there seems to be, we have two things going for us. We chased down our neighboring tribe to get them to agree to what we saw as a binding legally contract right to that water, because you, depending on different people you talk to in the county, well, that's our contract. You don't even have a say in that. That attitude. So we got the Yurok Tribe as a solicitor's opinion. We have a declaration from Humboldt County. And hopefully this stuff is not just confidential. Sorry about that, because some of it may or may not be. But anyway, I've been in a lot of rooms where they say, well, let's get the lawyers out of the room. We'll get something done. So I'll go with that. Let that out to you. Need to know basis. So we've made a lot of headway on that. And this so-called, it's a terminology thing, but it's called beneficial uses. That's a 1902 reclamation law, as long as it's for beneficial uses. So both tribes, we pushed for too long. Finally, the agreement that we put in place is our legally binding agreement with came out of the Southern California water rights negotiated dispute down there with the municipality, which Humboldt County is. And it is binding. And Hoopa and Yurok, last April, we had a signing ceremony in Wichbeck on the confluence down there with the Yurok Reservation. Both tribes have already signed it. And quite frankly, I don't want to say anything derogatory, but we've been chasing the county to meet with us. The chairman wrote an email saying, hey, we're just going to put it on your agenda and you got to deal with it. With all of that on the side, now the Bureau of Reclamation, this administration's views on some of this stuff is pretty favorable in defining, be real careful here, beneficial uses could be fishery restoration. Beneficial uses could be leasing the water that we've never gotten any compensation for 50 years since that dam's been up there, 60 years, however long it's been. So we're on a track towards refining that. We're on a track where the Interior Department may or may not, hopefully, is on the same page as us, and we're advancing that. And that's the only unallocated water that hasn't been allocated out of that dam. And the last thing I'll say is we're also a co-leads, Hoopa and the Yurok tribes are co-leads in the development of the water plan and the way that water is going to be released over the next however long it gets authorized for, but we'll retain the water supply that we already have. This water that I'm talking about, the 50,000 Proviso 2 water, will be somehow accounted for, but that's our starting point there, and we're a co-lead in that, and that's, you know, the whole... we've walked through, it's 14188, hopefully that's the right executive order. President Trump came out with that really early saying, well, we're going to get as much water from the north to the south. We're insulating ourselves, hopefully, in the regulatory process, so we're protected. We're also strongly eyeing any legal or other reasons why we would lose control of the water supply. And so that's that part of it. I'm hopeful. I'm ready to go to wherever we need to go. Been to Sacramento twice in the last 2 weeks. Probably going to go to Washington here soon, but hopefully it'll be for a really, really positive announcement on some of that stuff, including the water supply. Thank you, and available for questions as necessary, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I really want to thank Mike for his tenacity in all this. You know, they've been relentless, him and his team. I mean, if one thing doesn't work, they're going to go back and try something else. And the amount of paperwork that he gets to us, laws and strategies and, efforts and initiatives is pretty impressive. And so I appreciate that. This last meeting that he went to in Sacramento, Some of us joined here via Zoom. I think Joe Marshall was down there in person, and then I joined Mike the previous meeting a couple weeks ago down there with the Bureau of Reclamation Executive Director for the Pacific Region. Was very productive, this last meeting in particular, and it's moving in a good direction, and so we're really thankful for all that. He's got his sidekick still with him, Danny Jordan, working for free on behalf of the tribe. So it's been good to see. Hopefully, like I said, we'll finalize some of this stuff, cash in real soon. Are there any comments or questions on Mike's presentation? If not, we got one more. Okay, we've got a couple here. Lindsay had her hand up first, and Cheriku as well. So either of you ladies can come up, and then we'll go to Hoopa Development Fund after that.
Lindsay McCovey.
Hi, Mike. This might be a joint question for you and Clarence. Are you guys aware of the California border card that is required, that passed law in 2025, and anyone who operates a motorboat, including our Trinity River, needs to have a border card through the California State Parks? It's a $10 fee, and then there's fines, three different fines if you get caught with that. When I spoke to California State Parks, I asked if there was an exemption, because I looked through the exemptions, and tribes were not on exemption from that at all. So, and they said they will reinforce. So, were you guys aware of that? If not, why? Also, is there anybody attending the fish and game meetings through the Humboldt County? Because I look at the agendas every month, and they're Yotto Morick. Or what is Yotto? He used to be go there for the Native American representative, it said, when I used to read the agendas in the minutes, but I don't see that we have any Native American representation there. And is there anybody attending those meetings from either forestry or fisheries? They are done monthly.
Well, I'm going to blame it on the acoustics in the room. You're going to have to restate the first question. The second one I'll try to answer. Is it the Humboldt County Fish and Game Commission? Is that what you said?
Yes, there's Fish and Game.
I've been on that, actually. The Board of Supervisors appoints them. I've been on that in the past, but it's not something that's a real high value in terms of the things we're working on. Mm-hmm. They make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. When I was on it, there were things like sturgeon regulations that I put on there. They closed the sturgeon fishery, but it's all still under the state of California's authority. They can only recommend to those bodies. And the first part of the question, if you could restate it, I'll try to listen really careful to what you're talking about.
Are you aware there is a law to in effect on January of 2025 that all California people who operate any motorboat has to have a California boater card, and our river and tribes are not exempt from having that card, and there's a three-tier fine system.
Okay, so it's a California state regulation you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm aware of there are lakes and waterways you have to have a. I have a boat myself, and I keep it on her if I go to Whiskeytown. Mm-hmm. You have to comply with, I don't know all of it, but most of those are state regulations, like for invasive species, like that's, I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about.
No.
On the river? Okay. So, okay.
No, it is specific. Any water, and if they are using any size motor, have to have a California boater card, unless there are some exemptions if they're under 18 and they have somebody in the, and there's some others, commercial fishing license are exempt and some other ones, but that would have been good for us to know as a tribe, because they said they will reinforce. And so I haven't seen them in this.
I would advise this governing body on mm-hmm. the regulatory side of maintaining and protecting the tribe's sovereignty. I would strongly advocate that state regulations, if they're necessary, be looked at and assessed and evaluated, but not necessarily. There's a whole litany of, I don't want to get too far off your question there, of who owns this bed of the river out here, and that establishes jurisdiction. This tribe is very, I think you're right, very unique. We get around problems. We have things like Roland's Gravel Pit, where we have regulatory compliance with all the federal and state agencies. So perhaps And there's a lot of people in state government that have a bunch of liaison positions that mm-hmm. could be a conduit for getting that resolved, discussed, evaluated, understood first, I guess, and what the implications are to us, and then move on from there.
I could be wrong.
I might be missing a question too, sorry.
You know, the state has criminal jurisdiction on the reservation, right? So that's mm-hmm. the Public Law 280. Mm-hmm. But as far as civil regulatory, I don't believe that they have jurisdiction here. For example, we don't even have to have registration on our cars to drive a vehicle on the reservation.
So I had a lengthy discussion with the California State Parks when I was discussing this, asking about our sovereign rights and who is going to be enforcing those. They said anybody with a state authority. So it could be, they said it can even be a Forest Service or a fire person. Anybody that has that authority can issue those citations. And they said they will be monitoring, but I did not see any monitoring in our river this year. But, you know, with this new administration and the government, I that is something that I do fear. And then I believe, you know, I think separately the council are going to be talking about the boat access to non-tribal members. And within that application, is that on there? So if we do have to follow that, then they also need to have their boater registration. And honestly, I don't think that we should have any non-tribal boats in our river, any of our access points. And I think you guys, I've already heard many complaints about this issue. But if we can figure that out, the California border card, I think that's going to be prudent.
Yeah, I agree with you that's becoming an issue with non-tribal people on our rivers and harvesting fish and even, accepting money, guiding people on the reservation. And that's something that was brought up just Thursday. So we definitely need to have some follow-up on that because it's getting a little out of control at this point.
Okay.
Because the state parks of it is a whole different. I'm not sure how much he's talking about. It'd be fish and game and that type of thing as far as, but I'll try to find out more information.
Okay. Thank you.
I think we're going to have to fight the state on that one as far as them trying to enforce that on any tribal people. I know that we do require, as a tribe, any non-tribal member fishermen on the reservation should have their state license, I believe, but tribal members don't need to.
Okay, thank you.
You can get a free one, too. You can get a free state fishing license.
Yeah,
tribal members can get that, yeah.
I'm aware. Thank you.
I was actually kind of thinking on terms of the same thing as the regulations, because our neighboring tribes, they're doing regulations every year. But we are not doing regulations up here. So last year, for example, one person is pulling out 6 sturgeon and, you know, another person is pulling out 100 salmon at, you know, one night. You can't possibly need all those fish for one person. But we have nobody on the river regulating anything. So just for example, like I fish downriver with my husband sometimes. They have a fishery person go to your net every single morning. They're counting every single fish. But up here, we have nothing. So it's like their fishing season is completely closed down there. Completely closed because they're only allowed to fish so many, you know, pulling out so many fish. But up here, it's free game for everybody. And, you know, so maybe we should consider doing something like that.
I agree. More needs to be done on that. We met with tribal police a few times this past year, and they were doing regular patrols, particularly down Tishtane Campground, where people were hearing reports that the fishing ordinance was being violated, nets too close to the creek, those kinds of things, and so they were down there trying to stop it. On the other but it needs to be better. We got to get better at that. More enforcement, more tribal resource officers on the river. We got to do it because we're falling short right now. But I can also tell you that when Yurok's fishery was closed, it really wasn't closed.
I know.
Yeah, my mom was working down there, and people were coming getting their ice there in Wichbeck every day for their salmon. So, I can't say that they're really enforcing the way they should either, but that's another issue. We'd worry about our own issues.
Yeah, well, at least they have some form of regulations, you know what I mean? And it's not like our people are going without, because we have the fish weir, you know what I mean? So if our people are hungry, we do have that, but are we planning for the future, you know what I mean? So, like, we're fighting constantly for our water, and we need to have some other kind of regulations for our fish.
The council, probably a year and a half ago, went back and did a systematic review of the regulations. You got things that are out of my side of the thing that we're monitoring. I'll speak to that. But my understanding on the regulation part of it, they went back and did a lot of the true-ups. And so there are regulations. We work with them on things like the technicality of the closing the Tishtang Creek area around the conservation zone around there. Some of that's old stuff that was dates back to when the BIA was actually doing some of the regulation stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's all in place. The question about enforceability is there are regulations to enforce there. So, and then opening and closing. One of these, there's two different things. Now, if you're talking about our neighboring tribe, that's what I assume that you're saying. In terms of their spring regulations, they're pretty restricted. Ours is not. We have done the analysis of what the impacts are to the fishery and the naturally produced spring run Chinook, and it's not a lot we can do in terms of regulatory. And then I'm not going to catch the last fish. I will never advocate for that. But on the conservation principle, there's 3206 is a secretarial order of Interior and Commerce that says, do everything you can do before you get to any kind of restriction of a tribal fishery. Conservation standards, there's ocean fisheries, there's sport fisheries, non-tribal fisheries. We're supposed to hoop on your, supposed to get half of the surplus of the fish. So that's what you exhaust before you sit on the banks of the river. And I'm a strong advocate, you whatever you want to call it, is staunch tribal rights, sovereignty advocate, that we're the last ones sitting on the beach. And the meetings that we're trying to arrange with the head of NOAA Fisheries, one of the topics is going to be they're sitting on a listing of spring run Chinook that the Karuk tribe and the Salmon River Restoration Council filed. We've been in meetings with the Intertribal Fish and Water Commission. There's probably no need to do that. We should come in proactively and say, this is a recovery plan. And maybe that's a good nexus so that we have unified communication, coordination for other neighboring tribes so that, hey, you guys are closed, we're closed, we're going to do the conservation stuff. That would be a better way to do it. And that's the way to get around the Federal Endangered Species Act is to say, here's our plan. We're going to recover the fishery. And some of the stuff we're talking about big time here is like the South Fork Trinity River. It's a good thing. They are releasing fish from Trinity River Hatchery Spring Run in that system. They went out of the system now. There are areas, I just drive by and I look, well, half the time it's under, when it goes in the summer times, it goes underwater or underground. So there ain't no water. Well, they do, Spring Run can get up there in certain times of the year. Produced fish in their cold, droughty areas. If you go all the way up to Hay Fork and those areas, Hine Palm, there's good water sources. And we did, in a neighboring, coordinated, collaborative effort with the Iraq tribe, they're releasing Spring Run this year, trying to say, is those fish are even there? We're also doing them with the listed endangered species coho salmon. They're doing that in the Upper Basin. We have a project right here on Mill Creek that we're doing that. So we're doing everything we can in our power to do the conservation recovery efforts. That's a more direct approach to it than to say we're going to be regulating. We'll do the regulations when I'm shown the data and information that suggests that we're in that area of conservation need.
More natural resource officers. Yes. Because it's not only just our fish in our rivers, it's in our mountains. And so, like, we don't have enough people. Like, we should need to be doing a better job of protecting our resources. So, like, nobody really hunts on the reservation anymore, and it's been an issue. It's been an ongoing issue. So, like, maybe we need to pull funding and however we're going to do that, because I know we're always trying to figure it out. But maybe, like, send them through the program, how you send the, you know, your tribal officers, get them deputized, cross-deputized, and then that's their position. You know, natural resource, they could be on the river, they could be up the mountain somewhere, but like there's way too much ground to cover. It's not going to be enough for one person, you know, so like let's push like five and hopefully keep three. Make a contract longer. Instead of like 3 years, let's do five or even more than that, you know, so... I don't know. That's something I think that is really important that we need to push. Maybe that would help in all areas.
Councilman Jordan Haley.
We actually just met a tribal member about this a couple days ago, and he gave us some really good feedback. I know Chief McCovey tries to get as many people up the hill, but then when they get calls down, and that's what we were discussing, is I'd like to have someone on the river every day. Have someone you could swap out for their days off, like you're saying, and then have someone on the east side up in the mountains and someone on the west side in the mountains, because we do have people that come in and take advantage. And I'm of the opinion that we don't want any outstate people. This stretch of rivers for Hoopa and Hoopa people only. Same with the guide service, with whatever. I know when I was a kid, my dad and uncle, me in sport, it was our job. If the Bigfoot raptors came down, we had to go flip them or we got in trouble. Like, you know, this river is for us. It's the only place in the world that's for us. And so we did meet, and we are trying to look for some alternative funding and ways to do that, because our natural resources are vital. I know I'm chasing people out of the hill every time me and my boys go up. It's a real problem. It is. And we really need to be thinking of conservation and sustainability, you know, as far as like hunting wise too. You know, hunting just what we need and not going out. I know we have some young bucks that like to go out, shoot four or five deer a night. But from what I'm seeing, America looks like it's on the verge of collapse, and we're going to need those deer to survive here soon. So we've been discussing a couple alternative ways to try to deal with that and conserve. But I'll let you know when we have the next meeting on it and stuff.
Okay.
And I urge anyone in the public, when you see something going on, call us. Let us know. Let the chief know or the tribal PD, so that we can try to address it. And then, you know, for all Hoopa tribal members too, to feel free to chase people off. I mean, don't put yourself in danger, but let people know, hey, are you a Hoopa tribal member? No. What are you doing down here? You know, I mean, it's every one of our responsibility to protect too. Cause I agree. It's vital. It's just as important as our water and our children and everything else.
I just wanted to answer one last part of your question on the monitoring stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll be real clear about this past year. So he gets into the 80-20 and all that kind of stuff. On Fall Chinook, that's the only one that's highly allocated between the two tribes. It's supposed to get 50% of the share. They closed a lot of the non-Indian fisheries. So when we drafted and made a recommendation to the council, we said we're going to target what the lower number is plus the unharvested state share, and that was 1250. The run was probably better than predicted, and so we took about 2,300, so slightly over that by about 1,000 fish. But back to your question about the monitoring, I've been told to do that. Cook the books. Oh, you're not. Our monitoring techniques are scientifically sound. They're peer reviewed. We get restoration program money to do that because of Hoopa's advocacy to get it. It's part of their obligation to us. So we monitor it. We use BI money to evaluate it. It's a scientific protocol that's established. And for the amount of fish we estimate for harvest, we are looking at more than any fish that catches a clamaternity anywhere. And so my question and point there, though, is cook the books. When we first started into this stuff in the 80s, 90s, monitoring the fishery, first it was the federal government, BIA, then the tribes have stepped in, self-governance, self-determination. We're doing all of those things. It was a question about the data and this idea that Fox Garden Hen House, tribes can't go, they're just going to cook the books and send. So we have worked strived very hard to develop the capacity, capability, and lack of the better word to say what it is, but I'm not going to cook the books on it. And in fact, we show higher numbers than if somebody said we were over. We went through that about 7 years ago, and that's what I'm talking about. We established it's the rights to evaluate, and we're not going to catch the last fish. We're going to evaluate the conservation standards. Looks like the run was better this year. Looks like the Trinity run was better this year. And that's how we proceeded. It'll get reported next week or so, our first week of March, to the Pacific Council. We're going to meet with the head of NOAA Fisheries. We have a documentation of all this, too. We have a permit for our weir. It also includes all of our fisheries. So we have coverage from the federal government in the form of a permit. And we're obligated and responsible for adhering to some of it. But it's still the sovereign people at this table to make those decisions.
Okay. I've always kind of wondered, too, about the count. Because I would, go down either myself or with family. And sometimes you catch fish and nobody comes by to count them. And you think, oh, well. And these ones aren't, they're not getting counted fully, but there is, as part of your counting formula, right, do you guys account for, so for every fish counted, they account for, the ones they didn't get. So they have a formula that says, okay, well, we know we didn't capture all of them, but if we counted 10, we know that at least probably 5 or 6 to that every 10 were caught without being monitored. So there is kind of a formula that where they're able to account for some of that. But I do think that at times we were getting reports of people catching, large numbers of fish, with their net right next to the creek. And so we've got to do a better job of putting a stop to that because, they may come down and set after dark and then pull it, before daylight. So I know tribal police did step up their patrols for those areas, but it can always be more. So hopefully we will improve in that area. But it's good that we talk about these things. And, somebody mentioned that, like I think Jordan said, it's kind of on all of us. If you see it, report it to tribal police. Sometimes elected leaders, we hear about it after the fact. It's better if you call it directly into the police station.
Yeah, I just want to thanks for your question. I'm sorry. I would say thanks for your question. If there's any other follow-up.
Thank you. I just think it's like it's important for us to talk about this, but it's like, this is something easy to be like, oh, just leave it alone, But I wanted to talk about it because I think that we all should be talking about it, all of us as tribal people here, that this is our home and it's our job to take care of it,
I just wanted to follow up with that comment. With Hoopa Fisheries, they do take pride in the accuracy of the take. And so and I have seen people monitoring. So they are doing their best to catch every fish that is caught, to count the fish, yeah.
But there's also other educational things that we need to be putting out about the sturgeon. If we're catching our males, are we going to have, I grew up in a household where we was making sturgeon glue, and that's not a thing anymore. And there's no way that one person, is going to need that much sturgeon. I'm sorry. Like, it'd be cool to know that they were giving them all away, But the amount that is being wasted is something that we need to do better for, Just like.
We're a part of the consultation with the regulatory agencies, including NOAA Fisheries. Mm-hmm. And there are guidelines for green sturgeon as a species we have. But I could tell you, in some of the higher water years, our numbers are 10 to 30 sturgeon estimates. In higher water years, it's we have a higher catch there. But it's pale in comparison to some of the other numbers that are harvested. But we're within the guidelines of the impacts that they're projecting for that particular species, green sturgeon. But I wanted also, Mr. Chairman, that's my indulgence. Assignment for the council is, and you take it or leave it, you spoke about the Klamath Trinity school system. And this year, some of the people that had done the planning for Fish Fair has been shifted, and our staff has volunteered to take over the Fish Fair. But we're having some struggle with the Klamath Trinity on even getting an audience to talk about the planning for it and or even having the event. And so I'm willing to work with our liaisons or anybody with the school board and the school system. I think it was after the 2002 fish kill. It's educational, it's outreach, it's all of the things, partly what she was just saying there. And so this would be year one, and I think it's a good event, good thing to keep forward in some manner. If you could put that on your work list.
Thank you.
All right, we have one last presentation. That's Hoopa Development Fund. Come on up, Cassandra.
Hey, hello. I'm Cassandra Chavez. I know a lot of you out here. So I started working at Hoopa Development Fund in 2009, shortly after I obtained my degree at Humboldt State. And through the course of that, I worked until 2020, and I know Hoopa Development Fund like the back of my hand. And in 2012, we had a fire. I was able to recover the department back to its state. We passed audits. We didn't have any issues. But when I left in 2020, the program started breaking. And I'm sure many of you guys are aware of this. The Tribal Council made the decision in September 1st, they decided to restructure the department. And in that, I decided to apply for the position because I have experience with fixing Hoopa Development Fund. When I was looking back in hindsight at Hoopa Development Fund, what I realized is that we as a tribe rely on the other duties as assigned in job descriptions. And through the course of my time being there, a lot of the jobs that were being done were not on people's job descriptions. And so a lot of things fell during the time that I left. And the institutional knowledge of the department was fractured. So I felt like I had the skill base to fix it. Hoopa Development Fund hadn't loaned out money since 2024. And so Hoopa Development Fund doesn't receive tribal funds. Hoopa Development Fund runs off of the interest that reoccurs from the loans that they give out. So stopping the loans from being loaned out in for that year of time really put a damper on Hoopa Development Fund and really fractured them. So I think the Tribal Council made the best decision in deciding to restructure. My first task while I was, when I first came on, was to restructure the job description. So currently I am going to be advertising for one more position. Two of them have been in the process, which we're working on getting that. But the second and most important thing was getting those loans out. So I started in the office December 1st, 2025. And in that month, I gave out 78 loans, $480,000, which is going to help to regenerate Hoopa Development Funds and money coming in so that we can start repairing where we're fractured. Up to date till January, we've given 90 loans. We're at $582,000. We have a cap at $700,000. Once we hit $700,000, then we're going to close the intermediate program. So the intermediate program is the program that is between $2,001 and $10,000. And so that is going to be closing soon. So if you're interested in obtaining a loan, an intermediate loan, it's first come, first serve. So I'd recommend to apply as soon as possible. The short-term program will remain open. Like I said, we're filling for a position. So if you guys happen to know anybody who would like to apply, that would be great. One thing that I need to stress is that throughout that process of Hoopa Development Fund breaking, there's been a lot of loss of trust with our membership and with, the trust of where Hoopa Development Fund's incoming money, making sure that it goes to the places that it needs to be. So one of the things that I did to fix that is that one of the positions is going to be doing internal audits. So if you happen to have a Hoopa Development Fund loan that you are worried about the payments not being there, you can come into the office and sign up for an internal audit. I'll be able to go through, and my staff will be able to go through and verify every single payment to ensure that you guys are getting credited for everything that you paid in. And right now I'm having an issue with the people who have lost trust with us not paying. And so I'm working on trying to remedy that issue. So if you happen to be one of those people that lost trust in Hoopa Development Fund, that the reason would be because of you losing that, not knowing where your money went, I encourage you to come in and work something out with us right now, because we're going to have to start working on the collection soon. And when you signed for your loan, you signed that if you go delinquent, that we could declare it in default and take it to tribal court, as well as future per capita. So I encourage you to come in and maybe refinance to cure delinquency or come up with a payment plan. I'm trying to tie up all of these loose ends. So does anybody have any questions? I'm trying to make it really fast.
Sally Slater.
For employment, yes, that's in our policies.
Why is that?
We have to adhere to our policies. If that's something that the membership wants to change, then we'd have to go through the LPA process to change that. But I wasn't the one who wrote the policies, but I see the reasoning for it. If you don't have a good standing HOOPA development fund loan, then you are a risk, and employing you can open you up to having conflicts of interest, because you have access to change your books. You have access to, I will be able to check that, but in order for us to have trust with you, you have to be able to make your payments. It's essential. Yeah. We offer refinances to cure delinquency. So clearing up your debt in that type of way makes your debt clean again. And so you could well be able to apply if the committee approves for a refinance to cure delinquency. I encourage you to come into the office and talk to me about that, because I'm not going to talk about personal loans.
No, I asked you years ago, 2006, for you to check that, to go after him. You know, it's on my burden to pay for that now, and I don't have to take a job, but I'm saying that was part of your policy.
Okay, yeah. Please follow up with the department, with Cassie, and, you know, that'll be the best time to do that. So it's...
Sherry Carpenter.
Before Cassie got aboard, I switched jobs, and I had to do catch-up, call, credit. I got another job, I'm at another place. I wanted to pay all my loan. Nobody would follow up on it. The new lady that was over there, credit, didn't get no help. So 6 months later, I finally got attached on my check down where I'm at my new job. So those things fall through the cracks too. And also, is there any loans out for $10,000? You just opened up. Then I heard everybody got the loan already, the $10,000 out. The board members, and then now there we are working again, trying to get a loan, and then, you know, I'm still trying to pay up that other one, but then again, I was going to apply for that $10,000. I worked for the tribe for 30-something years, and I never even got a chance to even put in for a loan. And then the same way with Julie McIntosh's program. I finally got in a loan, 83, 85, 86. I got a $5,000 loan. Then they took it away from me. I got approved for the loan, and they paid for my bills. So, you know, it's good. It sounds good. You want to get all these loans out, but there's different stuff that they want us to do. But then again, there's no follow-up on it again. Like now she talked about the burning of the building. We need help through housing to get our bills paid through that COVID money. Debbie and I took a loan out to credit with Julie McIntosh, and then we can't even get the deed. We can't get that we paid it off, because it got burnt up and they couldn't find it. And so we couldn't get help from housing because they don't show that we own the house that we're living in to get maintenance on it. So luckily Lois and those guys helped us out for our land. So Debbie got a deed from dad that gave her that land. So then we got help. But see, like that, you know, you got all these young people coming in, don't know us. They just know of us. They don't know us to know that we work for the tribe. We're not going nowhere. This is our home. And all we're asking is for help. Now I can't apply because there ain't no more loans.
I didn't say there wasn't any more loans. I encouraged you to apply as soon as possible. And closing the intermediate program right now is going to allow us to reevaluate where we stand. As far as the committee members, they need to go through an additional process to even get a loan, and it has to go to the council. But if your application was there and is there, it will be processed in the order that it was received.
What about her deed? Can you help her out with her?
As in regard to your deed, I'll look into that, and you can I can reach out to you.
You guys won't find that, because if it wasn't for Lois's department helping us, we got help because they know who we are. We were born and raised here on a reservation. You got people that run in programs that don't even know us. Then you got your younger generation. You guys think you know us. You don't know us. If you'd have known, you would help us, and not you. I'm talking about all the departments. Nobody wants to help us. Because we don't have the last right name.
Right. Amen.
I don't have a last name either, so I get what you're saying there. But I hear what you're saying, and if you come into the office, I'll work with you.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. You know, if you're going to attach her for caps, it's because we have an outstanding bill. You know,
it's part of the agreement that you signed when you got a loan.
They probably won't, because they couldn't even catch me. I was already working for almost 2 years. They finally caught me. That's what I'm saying. I was reaching out to you. To the program, that lady that worked over there last summer.
The council restructured because of the inadequacies, so we all acknowledge that there are inadequacies, and I'm encouraging you to come in, and I'll work with you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. In closing, I would just... you know, for the council's sake, I think what's nice is we got to look around and see how many people, all of you, hung in there all day. So it shows how much you guys care. And that should inspire us all to, you know, come in on Monday and get the work done. It's important because we need all the help we can get, all hands on deck. So thank you, guys.